Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 38, text number 11. Ya iksha tiham rohito pyashat sato. Svateja sapashta tamo vidha brahman. Svamaya yatma rachitas tadikshaya. Pranaksha dibi saradeshvabhiyate. Ya iksha tam rahita pyashat sato. Svateja sopashta tamo vidha brahma. Svamaya yatman rachitas tadikshaya. Pranaksha dibi sadadeshvabhiyate. Chant, please. Children that can chant this. Sure wish when I was 8 and 9 years old somebody had taught me to chant Sanskrit that nicely. Maybe I could chant it better now that I'm 59 years old. Okay, translation. He is the witness of material cause and effect, yet he is always free from false identification with them. By his internal potency, he dispels the darkness of separation and confusion. The individual souls in this world who are manifest here when he glances upon his material creative energy indirectly perceive him in the activities of their life heirs, senses, and intelligence. Purport by the disciples, Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, Akura establishes the all-powerful position of the Supreme Lord, whom he is about to see in Vrindavan. The false concept of separation from the Lord is described in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 11:237. I'm just going to read the translation. Although all existence emanates from the absolute truth, Krishna, we imagine a second thing, this material world, to be entirely separate from the Lord's existence. With this mentality, we try to exploit that second thing for our sense gratification. Thus, the psychological underpinning of material life is the illusion that this world is somehow separate from God and therefore meant for our enjoyment. It is ironic that the impersonal philosophers, in their radical renunciation of this world, claim it to be utterly false and totally separate from the absolute. Unfortunately, this artificial attempt to divest this world of its divine nature, or in other words, its relationship to God, does not lead people to utterly reject it, but rather to try to enjoy it. While it is true that this world is temporary, and thus in one sense illusory, the mechanism of illusion is a spiritual potency of the Supreme Lord. Realizing this, we should immediately desist from any attempt to exploit the world. Rather, we should recognize the world as God's energy. We will actually give up our material desires only when we understand that this world belongs to God and is therefore not meant for our selfish gratification. I would like to repeat that sentence. It is very important. We will actually give up our material desires only when we understand that this world belongs to God and is therefore not meant for our selfish gratification. The word abhyate here refers to the process of surmising the presence of the Lord through meditative introspection. This process is also described in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the Canto 2, Chapter 2, Text 35, Bhagavan Sarva Bhuteshu Lakshita Svatmana Hari Drashyaya Bud Yadibir Drashta Lakshanar Anupatmakai. The personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is in every living being along with the individual soul. And this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. Akura states that the Lord is free of the egotistic pride afflicting ordinary embodied souls. Yet the Lord appears to be embodied like everyone else. And therefore, someone might object to the statement that he is free of egoism. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti comments on this puzzle as follows. How can we distinguish between free of false ego and being afflicted by it? If a living entity is situated in a body, argues the objector, he will encounter the unhappiness and confusion that occur within, just as a person living in a house, whether he is attached to it or not, cannot avoid experiencing the darkness, warmth, and cold that occur within it. This objection is answered as follows. By his internal potency, the Lord dispels the darkness of ignorance along with the separateness and bewilderment it produces. Om jnana timirandasya jnanjana shalakaya chaksu unmilita mina tasmai sri gurave namaha mukam karoti vachalam pandum damjayati girin yakripatam aham bande sri gurum tinitaruna vansha kalpaturubhyas chakripa sindhu bahibacha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnavibhyo namo namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Sivasiri Gaura Bhaktivinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So I'm very grateful to get this opportunity to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam. Although I feel particularly unqualified, this verse is very philosophical. So I beg for the mercy of the Vaishnavas that I may somehow or another speak something of meaning and of benefit. There were two Sanskrit words in this verse that caught my attention. Prana sadaneshu was one of them. It means the life airs in the body. Now, of the kids sitting here in class today, please raise your hand if you had a grain ceremony when you were 6 months old. Oh, my goodness. How many of you actually remember it as opposed to just your mom and dad told you about it? Wow, we got some Shruti Dars over there. All right. So in that grain ceremony that practically every single one of you experienced, at the end of that ceremony, when you're given the grain, and the grain of choice, it seems, in ISKCON, there was just a discussion on this on a Pruhit website, but the grain of choice seems to be what? Sweet rice. That seems to be the grain of choice, yes. So at the end of the grain ceremony, five times you're offered sweet rice to eat it. And these five times are there for a very specific purpose. They represent the five life airs that are present within the body. The prana, the apana, the udana, the samana, and the vyana. Do you all remember those five mantras from when you got your grain ceremony? Everybody that remembers those mantras, raise your hand, so I can doubt you. These five life airs exist within the body, and the soul is actually said to reside upon the subtle platform of these five life airs as they interact. And each one of them has a different function. The prana, and not to just focus in this direction, but for all our benefit, the prana is the life air that facilitates the beating of the heart and the breath that maintains us. Then we have the apana, which is the life air that forces out the waste products from the different ports of the body that are no longer needed. Then we have the udana. This is the life air which facilitates the vocal process. Sometimes when a child is a very little baby and cries very loudly, you'll say, oh, got good vocal cords on that one. Any of you cry when you were children? No, you all perfect kids, right? Yeah. So this udana is what causes that, or sometimes in the classroom, maybe some of the teachers have experienced this, that in the classroom, the udana is forcing some of the students to vocalize themselves maybe a little more than they should. None of you, though, right? Yeah. So that's the udana. Then the samana. The samana is the life air that forces the digestion in the body to take its place. It heats the body, heating the food and digesting it and warming up the internal parts of the body. And then the vyana. The vyana is the life air that causes the expansion and contraction of the different functions and activities in the body, cells. So these are the five life airs that you took grains at the beginning of your life to support their strength, because they support the soul. And we want the soul to be very comfortable and have a very solid support as it resides within this body. So these are the functions of this prana that we have within the body that Akura is speaking about, a way that which we perceive the Lord. We perceive the presence of the Lord through these different means because it's how the body functions. Ultimately, the functioning of this body is orchestrated by the personality of Godhead. The devotee genuinely sees is that everything that goes on is the Lord's arrangement. So how this body functions and all, this is the Lord's function within our body. The other word I saw, a little interesting here. Anybody get an idea from this verse why it's a perfect Ekadasi verse? Well, this is a Sanskrit word, apasta. Ah, of course, in Sanskrit means not. So, no pasta. It's a Ekadasi verse. Okay, that went over the word. All right. Another question for the children. Do any or all of you know who Akura is? We're talking about Akura. Do you know? Raise your hand if you know who Akura is. Okay, so a good number of you. So who does Akura work for? For Kamsa. Is Kamsa a good guy or a bad guy?
Bad guy.
So is Akura a good guy or a bad guy? Well, wait a minute. He works for a bad guy. Don't bad guys work for bad guys? Not in this case. Akura is actually a very amazing devotee. He is, Srila Prabhupada gives Akura as the classic example of how we should have our mind fixed when we enter Vrindavan. This is a very important point for all of us. How many of you remember or have yourself read, had your parents read to you the Krishna book story about Akura entering into Vrindavan? Yeah, quite a lot of you. So this is a very important story. I just wanted to read a few quotes from this pastime, as Prabhupada gives it in the Krishna book. And because Prabhupada clearly says a very important point here. Akura then thought, when Krishna and Balaram are pleased with my prayers, certainly they will take my hand, receive me within their homes, and offer me all kinds of respectable hospitalities. And they will surely ask me about the activities of Kamsa and his friends. Prabhupada then says, Akura passed the whole journey to Vrindavan without knowing how long it took. When he reached Vrindavan, the sun was setting. As soon as he entered the boundary of Vrindavan, he saw the footprints of the cows and Lord Krishna's footprints, impressed with the signs on his soul of the flag, the trident, the thunderbolt, the lotus flower. Upon seeing the footprints of Krishna, Akura immediately jumped down from his chariot out of respect. He became overwhelmed with all these symptoms of ecstasy. He wept and his body trembled. Out of extreme jubilation upon seeing the dust touched by the feet of Krishna, Akura fell flat on his face and began to roll in the ground. Now here's what Prabhupada says about this. Akura's journey to Vrindavan is exemplary. One who intends to visit Vrindavan, do any of you plan to go to Vrindavan? How many of the children have already been to Vrindavan? Oh my goodness. Okay. How many of the rest of you that have not planned to go to Vrindavan? Really? Not all of you? How many really want to go to Vrindavan? All right. So, if you plan to go to Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada instructs you that this is your mentality. This should be how you're thinking. One who intends to visit Vrindavan should follow the ideal footsteps of Akura and always think of the pastimes and activities of the Lord. As soon as one reaches the boundary of Vrindavan, one should immediately smear the dust of Vrindavan all over their body without thinking of their material position or prestige. Actually, one cannot go to Vrindavan by purchasing a ticket. The process of going to Vrindavan is shown by the activities of Akura. Without hesitating, Akura immediately got down from his chariot, fell flat like a rod before Krishna and Balaram. Upon touching the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he became overwhelmed with transcendental bliss. His voice choked up and he could not speak. Due to Krishna's transcendental presence, incessant torrents of tears fell from his eyes. He remained stunned in ecstasy as if devoid of all powers to see and speak. Now, Krishna is the perfect example of how to treat devotees as well. In this next section, when Krishna and Balaram receive Akura, they show how you should receive a guest in your home. If a devotee or a saintly person or a very special spiritual master or sannyasi comes to visit your home, here's how you should receive them, following in the footsteps of Krishna and Balaram. Taking him by the hand, Krishna and Balaram brought them into their sitting room and worshipped him with suitable presentation of honey and other ingredients. Who knows what that presentation of honey is called? Who knows the name for that? Yes? Varuni is the name for honey, that's true. But when you offer it in this manner described here, it's called madhuparka, because you mix it with milk and honey. It's a sweet drink. Then both Krishna and Balaram offered a cow in charity and brought very palatable edibles, and Akura accepted them. When Akura finished eating, Balaram gave him spices and as well as sandalwood pulp just to make him more pleased and comfortable. The Vedic system of receiving a guest was completely observed by Lord Krishna himself to teach all others how to receive a guest in their home. It is a Vedic injunction that even if a guest is an enemy, he should be so well received he does not apprehend any danger from the host. If the host is a poor man, he should at least offer a straw mat and a glass of water. So even if you don't have very much, everybody's at least got a chair and a glass of water in their house, right? Is there anybody that doesn't have a chair and a glass of water in their house? No. So if somebody comes, you can receive them like that. So this is the mentality that as Vaishnavas, we should strive to have when we visit Vrindavan. Many of us have visited Vrindavan. Many of us regularly visit Vrindavan, aspire to again return to Vrindavan. So this example of Akura is very instructive, because going to Vrindavan is not just a physical activity, it's a devotional activity. The process of meditating on, remembering the Lord's pastime, the process of rolling in the dust when one gets to Vrindavan, sometimes, as mentioned here in this description from Krishna book, the prestige and position of our bodily identification prevents us from rolling in the dust. Oh, that's dirty. You know, you go to Vrindavan and it's, you know, it's not so clear. It's not the Vrindavan that they're describing here. This Vrindavan's different. And, you know, there's all rickshaw people and exhaust fumes and no, I can't take that dust on my body. So we have to give up that mentality. Now, there's a very wonderful place that can help with that. If you go to Govardhan Hill, on what we refer to as the backside of Govardhan Hill, is a place called Kadambavan. And at Kadambavan, there's no buildings or anything built up there. It's still one of those very nice places. And the sand is very, very cooling. It's about ankle deep. And there are many, many monkeys that play over there. And, of course, Kadamba trees. And it's said in the Shastra that if one rolls in the dust at Kadambavan and smears that sand all over their body, it will relieve one of the bodily identification of life. Now, not just the kids, but how many of us think that we're this body? Yeah, well, maybe there's a few more advanced kids in the group. Most of us are completely overwhelmed by the bodily concept of life. And this bodily concept of life actually prohibits us and restricts us from experiencing pure devotional service. So we want to do all the different things that we can to get free from that bodily concept of life. If we examine in this particular chapter, we're on the 11th verse. If we examine some of the previous verses, there's some very interesting indications here about Akura. In verse number 3 and 4, we see one of the two classic mentalities of a devotee. And this is a very important lesson for children to remember. It popped right up when I said that. A very important lesson to all of us to remember, but especially as we're growing up, humility. In verse 3 and 4 of this chapter, the humble position Akura mentions of thinking of himself as being unqualified and incapable of getting the Lord's mercy like that. And then following that, in verse 5 and 6, he shows hopeful expectation. But because I'm the devotee of the Lord, I can expect that he'll give me his mercy. This is the motivation that drives us as we approach our devotional service, that we will get the Lord's mercy, that we will get the blessings of the Vaishnavas, that we will get the opportunity for advancement in devotional service. The next verse after those, there's two or three more verses, they show the amazing character of Akura's knowledge, because Akura is speaking of seeing Krishna and then describing who Krishna is as the cowherd boy and the lover of the gopis and what his activities are. So he reveals that actually, even though he works for Kamsa, and even though Kamsa is not a very nice guy, Akura is of a different caliber. that he's actually aware of the innermost pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he sees everything in relationship to the Lord. Time for the kids to go. All right. Remember Akura's example of humility in your classroom today. Hare Krishna. So this is a wonderful scenario. And then, and I think it was just the verse yesterday or the day before, Akura shows an example of how he sees everything in relationship to the Lord. I've had the experience, because I work a late shift at work quite often, which means I'm driving home about 10 or 10:30 at night. And all along the road here, this has been a very interesting phenomenon for the last couple of months. Up on the roadside, you'll see lots of deer. And groups of 3, 4, and 5 on the side of the road where the little gully is, they're eating. Now, apparently, because of all the rain we've had, the forest on either side have flooded. There's not a lot of growth there. So they're coming out to the sides of the road, and they're completely fearless. But they're on the right-hand side. And 3, 4, 5 groups of 3, 4, and 5 all up and down between the start of the property here and all the way down to my house. It's really quite an amazing phenomenon. This is a very auspicious sign. See deer on the right-hand side like that. So Akura, he sees this. As he's driving the chariot, some deer pass him on the right side. He thinks, oh, this is very auspicious. Now, what does he conclude from that? Now, the materials will think, I've had people at work use this phrase. Oh, such and such happened. That's a good day. I better go buy a lottery ticket. Every good fortune's coming my way. Let me get a lottery ticket. So this is how the materialist sees these things. But Akura sets a wonderful example for us. He sees that here is an auspicious symbol, deer passing my right hand side. This must mean I'm about to meet the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he concludes everything as it is in relationship to the Lord, that his darshan of the Lord will be the blessing that he's going to get. So this is a very nice mentality too. Now, in this particular purport, the first point that is a very essential point is the explanation of how to understand the ability that the living entity has for enjoying. To enjoy this material world, we have to see it as separate from its owner. Just like if someone has something that you hanker for and you want that, if you actually are able somehow to get that from them, the only way you can really enjoy that is if you see it as not being connected to them, as, you know, completely separate from them, which is what this purport is explaining. So the way that we are able to enjoy the energy of the Lord, namely this material world, is by divorcing it, separating it from the Lord himself, and seeing it as something for us to enjoy. The phrase used in here, in parentheses, is the second thing. In other words, there's the creation, and everything is under the creation. But we want to take a portion of that and separate it and make a second thing out of it. And that will be what we can enjoy, because after all, it is separated from the Lord. So that is the only way that we can develop the enjoying mentality, is by seeing ourselves and the item that we want to enjoy as being separate from the personality of Godhead. This type of enjoyment requires what's referred to in the third paragraph here as a radical renunciation. Now, I thought about this radical renunciation. I thought about an example of it. I came up with one. Who remembers the Gaur Purnima sweet rice? This was some of the most amazing sweet rice Shankar has ever made. The texture of the grains that were almost broken down, but not completely broken down. The thickness of the milk that was not quite milk, but not quite, you know, kheer. Fresh strawberries, fresh blackberries, fresh blueberries. The whole combination was just absolutely amazing. It was really, really incredible. Now, if I were a person who was renouncing sugar, something my wife would be quite satisfied to hear, but which isn't going to happen. But let's assume, for the sake of this conversation, that I'm a renunciate. I'm not eating any sugar. Now, the sweet rice is interesting. It's served at a separate table. So I could go through the feast line and get all the nice feast prasadam that's there, and no, the sweet rice doesn't exist. There's no sweet rice. It's not a part of the original thing. It's a little separate, so I can disavow it. There is no sweet rice. Radically renounce it. It doesn't exist. There is no sweet rice. Even though everyone around me is enjoying the sweet rice, right? So this radical renunciation is actually, it's indicated here that it's quite foolish. Quite foolish. Better, it mentions, that one understand the activity in its correct correlation and appreciate it in that manner. So, for instance, instead of drinking, say, 12 cups of sweet rice, with intelligence, one might take one glass of sweet rice and enjoy it as a part of the entire feast. This would be the proper way to observe this. Not to falsely, oh, there is no sweet rice. No, it was right there. No, I never saw any sweet rice. So in the same way, we can try to renounce this world. There is no world here. Everything is illusion. Everything is temporary. There is no, true existence of anything. But Srila Prabhupada oftentimes, completely destroyed this concept. That it is a real existence. This world is real. It is tangible. But it is only beneficial when we see it in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, it's entangling. Otherwise, it brings about our suffering. Otherwise, it brings about our entanglement and downfall further in this material world. So by properly seeing things, by properly understanding everything in its due place, then we actually will get benefit from it. But when we try to radically renounce and pretend that it doesn't exist, it simply causes so much confusion and difficulty in our life. Now, Akura further points out in this, in the end of this purport here, he mentions that there is the pitfall that many of us, it's our egotistical pride, that we all have that. If we have a body, egoism comes with that body. We're proud of our body itself. We're proud of our particular looks, of our level of intelligence, of our particular abilities, or we're proud of our high level of renunciation, our advanced level of spiritual understanding. All these different things you become very proud of. So it becomes a type of ego, and we identify with it. And this is actually our false identification. These are not the real identification. So we understand this happens because we have a body. Okay, well, I've got a body. It's bound to happen. What can be done? So the unintelligent person, they say, well, Krishna's got a body. Spiritual body. Krishna's there with the cowherd voice. Krishna's there with the Mother Jasoda. He's got a body, so he must also have these same pitfalls. He must also have some degree of egoism. But actually here, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a very interesting example. The darkness of ignorance that is that understanding that we're this body is completely dispelled by Krishna. This is his ability because it is his own energy. Because he possesses that energy, he can do away with its influence anytime he desires. Two particular qualities, both in the verse and in the purport, are mentioned as being a part also of this identification. And that is separateness and bewilderment. When we are in the darkness of ignorance, when we are in that illusion, the mentality of separateness and the function of bewilderment are automatic. If we're identifying with the material nature, if we're identifying with this body, if we're trying to enjoy separate from the personality of Godhead and the enjoyment that is connected to him, then separateness and bewilderment are a package deal. So all of this is simply due to our misidentification. The ability to give that up is an example of advancing in devotional service. When we first come to devotional service, we're very much enlivened, very much enthusiastic. We, very fired up. And then after years and years, we kind of hit a plateau. If at a certain point we don't motivate ourselves beyond that plateau to continue advancing by increasing our hearing, increasing our chanting, increasing our reading, increasing our knowledge, increasing our service, an equally important part of the process of devotional service, then the bodily identification begins to catch up with us. What's that they say? If you don't go forward, you're going backwards. You never just stay in the same place, right? You're either going to go one way or the other. You're going to advance further, or you're going to slide backwards. So it's not just I found a perfect spot here, I'll just stay right here. So this Purport here is speaking about how even though within the body, one can give up that bodily identification, that egoism that is associated with the body, that feeling of enjoying a separate thing, that feeling of separateness and bewilderment that comes with it. So the Lord, he has that superior ability. I've mentioned this example many times, that when we are struggling with the material nature, one-on-one, we have no opportunity of overcoming it. Material energy is an energy of the personality of Godhead. Therefore, it is more powerful than we are. But when we place a buffer between us, namely the personality of Godhead and his representative, the spiritual master, that gives us the ability to now protect ourselves and be protected from the influence of the material energy. The Lord is the owner and controller of these, so if we seek his shelter, then we can also be given that protection from that. So this type of consciousness, this type of desire to free ourselves from this, this is what's being spoken about here in this verse. As Akur approaches Vrindavan, and as he prepares himself for meeting Krishna Balaram. This is also another point, because we shouldn't assume that we can simply meet the Lord. That just, you know, in due course of time, I've been a devotee for so many years, and pretty soon Krishna will just manifest before me. We have to prepare our mentality, prepare our consciousness, prepare our activities. And this is what Akura is doing. This is why Srila Prabhupada uses the example of Akura as being the perfect example of how to enter Vrindavan. Now, Vrindavan is not just the physical place Akura is going to. Vrindavan is not just a particular locality. Vrindavan is the spiritual world. And that spiritual world can be present anywhere. Particularly, we want it to be present in our consciousness and in our heart. So if we're planning to enter into Vrindavan, we have to prepare ourselves in the same way. And this example of Akura is very nice. Meditating on that travel, while Akura was traveling, or while we're preparing to make our heart and consciousness the spiritual world, he was remembering the pastimes of the Lord. He was meditating, it mentions here, he was meditating on them so much he didn't have any idea how long the journey took. That's amazing. So in this mentality, he completely forgot about the presence of time and space. He's completely absorbed in the pastimes of the Lord. And when approaching that place where the pastimes of the Lord were taking place, his mentality of submissive humility, wanting to embrace that place, is also a very wonderful example for us. So this type of internal meditation, this is what we should strive for as we look to make Vrindavan a place of our heart, a place of our consciousness, and then if we're fortunate enough someday to actually reside there. So this is a nice example that we get from this verse and from this whole chapter of the activities of Akura, who, even though he works for a bad guy like Kamsa, is actually a wonderful devotee. So we can understand that we may find ourselves in less than desirable external situations, but our internal consciousness is what will determine whether we are actually embracing the process of devotional service while in that situation. I'll finish there. It's appropriate time. If anybody has any questions or comments, we'll answer them. If not, then we can just try and remember the pastimes of Akura and pray to be as devoted to the Lord and as fortunate as he is to have the Lord give us his mercy and blessings. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.